Hello, everyone. Welcome to PRT. That's Paranormal Roundtable. I'm your host, Josh Turner, also known as Wolf. And with me today is my co-host,
Anthony.
Anthony.
I was waiting for you to come in with some kind of derogatory nickname or something.
Oh, my God. Well, Flacco. We always call you Flacco. I mean, you don't.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
You don't really like that anymore because you're not really that skinny anymore. You're too big. But when you were little, we called you that.
Yeah. You're just kind of stuck.
And so, folks, Tony cannot be here because he has to work, and Zane does too because we're working class people. And so Anthony is going to be helping tonight. We're going to do a show. And he's taking a break from making his tortillas.
I've been making homemade tortillas lately. I just kind of got a wild hair at my butt to make them one day. And I looked up a recipe on YouTube and tried it. And the first time they came out great. Second time, I'd like to pull my hair out because I couldn't get the dough right. But it's because I put like twice the amount of water I was supposed to put in.
Yeah.
But this third time around, they were awesome again. So
yeah, and my brother comes home from work and he's like, hey, can I have some of these pancakes?
Yeah.
and so we were like, yeah, sure. Those are tortillas right before he pours the syrup on them. So,
pours syrup on everything.
It's a work in progress, though. You're doing good. You're doing good. It's a work in progress. And the last batch you had came out pretty good.
Yeah.
And so he's pretty industrious.
Nobody else in this house can make tortillas like me as it stands now. So
because no one can make them.
Exactly.
So I go into your room somehow. And there's a tortilla press there on the desk, and I'm like, what is this? And you're like, it's my new tool. And I started laughing. I told my wife he's going to make tortillas again. Yeah. But now you're taking it serious. You're going to seriously start doing it.
Yeah, rolling them out is really hard. I hate it.
Yeah, it's a pain. But you got that little press now.
Mm-hmm. It makes it so much easier.
Yeah. So that's what's going on in Anthony's life. As you can see, it's very exciting. He's been doing architecture school, and he's making tortillas. And he designed our house. He actually designed our house. Yeah. So we are getting ready to start building. And so that's exciting. And so that's what's going on with Anthony. With me, what's going on with me is we have a podcast we're going to do. We got to give you my email address. It's doswolfman88@gmail.com. doswolfman88@gmail.com. Send us your crazy stories. Nothing's too crazy, man. If you know, people tell me all the time, you're going to think I'm crazy. I'm like, well, I'm crazy for listening because I love to hear it. And then I repeat them on the show. And so we have guests tonight. We're going to introduce them. First, we got the PRTpodcast.com, PRTpodcast.com. You go to that. It's our website. We have art submissions. We have our store, our PRT store, where you can buy all kinds of stuff. Did you want to update that?
Yeah, actually, I've updated everything in the store to have our new logo on it with the UFO added. And as of the time of whenever this is being released, we're also going to have a backpack and like a one of those neck gaiters with the logo on it. So
yeah,
that'd be pretty
cool. Check that out. Yeah, and so I'm going to introduce our guests. They are from Cornerstone Supernatural. Do you guys want to say hi?
Hey.
Hello.
Thanks for having us on, you guys. Hi, Josh. Hi, Anthony. We're sorry we don't have any tortilla presses up here, but we're Canadian, hey? So we have like waffle makers because we have a lot of maple syrup up here. So just kind of understand that.
So you guys are from where exactly?
The thriving metropolis of Vancouver, British Columbia, which is on the west coast. It is surrounded by mountains on one side, ocean on another, mountains on the other side, and then you guys, the United States of America, is on the south of us. So really, we don't have a lot of room.
North of that city called Seattle, and you know, you guys just got an NHL team, and we're not too happy about that. There's going to be a friendly rivalry between the Vancouver Canucks and the Seattle Kraken. So we're looking forward to that when everything gets going this year. Yep, that's what they're called, the Kraken.
Yep. That's cool.
So that'll be interesting how that goes. And so yeah, we're actually Cornerstone Supernatural. We're located in the Lower Mainland. But we travel throughout the province of British Columbia, which also includes Vancouver Island. You know, it's not connected to the mainland, but it's still part of British Columbia. We say that jokingly, but yeah, we've got investigators in our group from, you know, that have just started out to people that have been doing it for over 35 years. So, but that's where we're at. That's where we are.
One of the things we had talked about before the show, we spoke briefly, and we were talking about paranormal unity and everybody kind of coming together and trying to work together to figure things out. And I needed to address something. We put a UFO on our logo. So I got inundated with emails, people saying, are you guys going to turn into a UFO show? And I'm like, I was like, you have a Bigfoot, you have a zombie, you have a dog man.
There are three other cryptids on that logo.
Three other cryptids on there. And we put the UFO on the top and removed the little witch character because I thought it looked kind of, you know, hokey or whatever. So we moved the UFO on there and everybody's like, oh my gosh, is UFO. One of the things that we talked about, Paul and Janine, was that it's all related, you know?
Yes.
And people, I'm sorry,
I think that when people think about paranormal as a whole, they're generally thinking about, oh, it's ghosts. Or spirits or things that come out of the wall and say, boo. It's not, paranormal is everything. It's anything that's not normal, period. And again, it could be Dogman. It could be Sasquatch. I mean, for us up here, Sasquatch is a big thing. UFOs, that's another fairly large subject up here. So we've got to be more than just the ghost hunters out there. We're doing any type of investigation we do. It can be of any of those types of paranormal activities.
Our particular group embraces it all. So we don't say we're just ghost hunters per se. But we'll investigate UFOs if somebody has a sighting or if they think that they've seen Bigfoot. We'll talk to them a little bit about that because the paranormal really is anything that isn't normal.
And yes.
That's how we react.
Yeah, it's just an umbrella term, really.
Exactly.
It's true. But I mean, what do we do majority of the time? It is ghost hunting. Yeah, I mean, it is majority of the things that we do, obviously. That is where we get a lot of our stories. That is where we get a lot of the locations that we go in and do investigations of. And whether that's residential or whether it's businesses or theaters or historical locations, museums. Yeah, that's all part of it. But there is that amount in there that, yeah, we've got people on it as our membership within our members of our group that they believe in the UFOs or they believe in Sasquatch and are very dedicated to that that area of the paranormal, so to speak. Yeah. So yeah, we've got to be more than just ghost hunters.
And it's funny because on our Facebook page for Cornerstone Supernatural, they let us know if we're trending too much in one direction. They'll say, you know, you're doing too much ghost. We want some UFO stuff. So then we'll do some UFO stuff. They go, no, we don't want UFO stuff. We want some more ghost stuff. So it's always trying to keep everybody a little bit happy, which is a challenge too, right?
Keeps you on your toes.
That's what happens with us too.
Ghosts want to appear more than UFOs do. And that's something that we just can't control. Yeah.
Well, you know, and another thing we come across too, And it's actually a breath of fresh air to hear you say that. You actually took the words out of my mouth. The paranormal it encompasses it all. That's why we chose the name Paranormal Roundtable. I can't even take credit for that 100%. That was the committee that the guys here together kind of voted on it. I was all for Bubblicious Fisheye, and they were like, doesn't make any sense. I was like, okay, guys, whatever. I don't know what you're smoking, but I thought it sounded great. But anyway, I got voted down, and looking back on it, it may have been a little odd, but whatever. So Paranormal Roundtable is what we went with. And so we end up getting people telling us all the time. They're like, you do a lot of cryptids and stuff. Why do you call it the paranormal? I'm like, because cryptids to me are paranormal. It's out of the realm of normality.
Exactly.
Yeah. And to hear you guys say that, that's we're on the same page with that. That's for sure. But one of the things I notice is people who are into UFOs, they think it's all connected to that. People who are into ghosts think it's all connected to that. And, you know, they could both be right. I mean, you know, I just look at it as all of the above.
For sure. The more I do investigations myself personally, I become more of a dimensionalist. I don't know whether a lot of your listeners are kind of into that. But, you know, I'm kind of like, I don't know. Maybe it's not like, maybe it's just another thing going on that we can't see.
Like maybe perhaps there's an alternate reality or an alternate vision that something's reaching through. I don't know. We don't have the answers for everything. And all we can do is show whatever evidence we got. And then I mean, you were mentioning before, Josh, about your haunted house. And anybody else that might go into that house would say, yeah, you know, it's not haunted. And so I want to see something, you know, coming out of the wall, or I need to see this in order to believe. There's when I go and secure different locations in order to do a paranormal investigation, you've got two different types of people. You've got those on one side who's, I believe, I've seen this, I've heard this, my grandmother's talked about it, I have this weird feeling in my basement, things like that. You've got the other side that says, don't talk to me, I don't want to know about it, I'm scared, I don't believe, you're just full of BS. There is no
happy medium.
There's no. It's all, okay. There's a middle
medium
line.
Medium might not be the best word, but you know what I mean, right? Yeah.
Yeah. You can't be on both sides. You just can't. There's one side or the other. There's no middle. There's no middle ground.
I always say you may be a non-believer until it happens to you, and then all of a sudden your opinion starts to change about, you know, these other realities that may coexist with us.
We took in our particular group, you've got all sorts of different beliefs, different whether that's spiritual or otherwise. So that makes it interesting when we go out as a team, because we feed off of each other. But we take individuals as guests every now and then for a particular investigation. We did this at one where it was a freelance journalist that came with us. And we went into the thing, and he was like, I don't believe. There's nothing I can – you can't show me anything or anything like that. I said, okay, well, look, come on with us and see what you like, see what you think about this. So we went in this particular location. It just happens to be one of the first skyscrapers in Vancouver. And we split into different teams, and he was with this one team that had the structured light sensor, or the SLS camera. And he started, there were some things that were captured that particular night. And also he heard things by himself that he could not explain. And there's no way that we could debunk it. So he came out of there as a different individual than he did going in. And so, like Janine says, sometimes you have to have that reality in order for it to come forward.
Well, you know, I was going to ask you guys a question. All right. So how did you guys get involved in the paranormal? Like, how did it start? Like, just give me the beginning. Like, what happened?
I think that I'll let Janine go on this one, because she's got more interesting story than I do. But
so I had my first what I call ghost encounter that I consciously recall when I was about 10, and I was staying over at a girlfriend's place, and you know, I look up and I go, who's that guy in the doorway? And she said to me, oh, that's my dead uncle. And I was like, okay. But I was really blessed that I was born in a family that actually embraces this. And I was just kind of a weird little kid. And I had lots of deja vu, and I'd predict things. And my family's like, okay, you're kind of spooky. But I was never shunned or anything. So they were like, okay, I believe you. What's happening next? And it wasn't like I could control it. It wasn't like, you know, I turn on my ESP and I could suddenly see things. It was just every once in a while, these weird things would occur. And there was no rhyme or reason to when they did or why they did. It's just every once in a while, I was this spooky little kid. And so for me, that was kind of
and in a long way, she still is.
Yeah.
But, you know, and Janine's had the opportunity or the where she's been on the road and she's lost time. So that's a whole other, that's another story that she'll talk about. But for me, it was being my father had passed, and he was a painter and decorator, and he always wore the white coveralls. Right. And so at my mom's, he just appeared behind, at least to me, I could see him, and, you know, whether it was grief that was going through or whatever. But I mean, that's he was there, and he was in the white coveralls, didn't say anything. I could, you know, it's like a full figure to me. And that sort of got my juices revs back in. You know, when I was I wasn't that old at that time, but it was something that triggered things. Janine had a couple others that she's had more activity than I did. So
yeah, and it was even kind of interesting as my dad aged and he got into his 80s. And I was watching TV with him one day. And like I said, he embraced kind of the weirdness that I had. And we sat there one day and he turned to me and said, "I've left my body twice. I don't know if I do it the next time, if I'm ever going to be able to come back." And luckily I was an adult when he told me this, because I thought, what an interesting thing for your father to say as he's aging.
How old were you?
I would be in my late 20s, maybe early 30s. I was the last child of several. So I was the youngest kid. We were all 7 years apart. So he would be in his 80s at that point. And we were just sitting on the couch watching TV, and he just turned to me and said, "You know, this has happened to me, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to come back if it happens again." And I was like, okay, Dad. Okay. You know?
And so ultimately he passed. And how old, like, how did he pass?
Of natural causes. He was 82, 83. So he had emphysema all his life. So it was totally a natural thing to happen. And I always thought that both my mother and my father have passed now. I always thought that there would be some sign when they did. And I really didn't get that. So it was, I sometimes
hold
wondered.
Hold on. We're getting some signs now.
No, we are now. But at the time, I always thought, you know, maybe I get this, it's going to happen, this foreshadowing, if you will. But for me, and it, with my immediate family, that didn't happen. With some of their family, it happened. Kind of interesting. When my mother's brother-in-law died, I kind of had a premonition before that, but not with my immediate family. So I don't know whether there's this kind of disconnect that happens between that you're not really supposed to know what's going on all the time. Maybe that's part of life and death. I don't know.
See, the reason I was hold on about you know, we put Christmas lights up every year, and there is we have squirrels, obviously, and they'd have a fun time chewing through the light strings like squirrels do. And so I replace, you know, six or seven strings every year. It's, you know, but every year after a certain period of time, lights come on by themselves. Things totally unplugged. There's the breakers off. There's no electricity going to them. Cannot figure it out for the life of me. But there's only certain colors.
Yeah. And so it happened ever since my aunt died. And in our family, we kind of had the tradition of keeping solid colors for your Christmas lighthouse. Like my particular family had blue and my aunt's had green. So what the ironic part is that when these lights we have in the back 40 feet, as I call it, when they're unplugged and there's no power going to them, the green and the blue ones light up every year since they died. Like, we can't explain it.
There's that is
no
weird.
But I have a shade garden, so it's not like there's solar powered lights or anything like that. They're not like super glowing, but they're on, and I film it every year. I'm like, "Yep, here they come again," you know. And poor Paul's like, "No," I'm like, "Yep, they're back. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Hi," yeah. You know.
And it's been about, I don't know, 7-8 years yeah. that they come on every year. We've been together for, you know, 24 years. Before that, they never come on ever. So it's once the passing happened that here they are. And so that's
who knows, but I find it.
I can't explain it. Yeah, and so that's now. And that's little things that we go through now. We've had a couple of our, we get team gatherings over here where we've got, mediums and claircognizants, and we've got people who are just, you know, are sensitive. And we've been told there's a couple of spirits that hang around here, and they've been describing him. So it could be. It just, you know, I wish they'd stop doing that at certain times, because the lights come in and hit me in the eye when I'm in bed. But it happens. I mean, it's continuing on your, I think Janine's side of the family might be a little bit more active in, because they're more open about it. I mean, her brother was high up in the military. Yeah. And so if you want to get away from ghosts, this one's another good story about the paranormal.
About aliens per se. So he had a very high security clearance enough that I was investigated by CSIS, which is, you know, kind of like our security system here for your listeners who don't know.
Yeah, for Canada,
and they they would check up on all of our family to see what we were doing and who we were doing. And at the time, because we were oil and water, my brother was 21 years older than I was, you know, and so we were like button heads all the time. And they'd phone up and my mom would go, oh, she's just in college now. And they go, what's she taking? I go, tell them communism. And she go, no, don't tell them that. Because it was a big deal, obviously, to his career. But he had said, because he had been to NORAD, and he said, you know, I've seen things at NORAD that I can't explain. He said, and this was back in the 70s. He said, there are aircraft flying that there is no way ever that it's ours, because we can't go those speeds, we can't go in those directions, we just can't do it. And one time he said, he was talking to my mom and dad, and I was kind of upstairs listening when I shouldn't have been listening. And he said, we have an alien. He said, they got it in the ice. So somewhere in the northern part of either Canada or maybe a little bit behind, he said that they did indeed find something and they had him. So unfortunately, he's not with us now, so I can't kind of validate that. But it stuck with me for, you know, 30 years when I started to like kind of tune into this stuff. So like I said, he and I were like oil and water. He was a diehard military guy. And I have no reason to believe that he would lie about something like that, because it was too critical to his career at the time.
Did he say anything about like what this thing may have looked like?
No, well, it was funny because I was talking to his younger brother, my older brother, kind of in the middle. And I said, do you remember him telling that story? And my brother goes, yes. He goes, the X-Files, the movie of the X-Files, that's the story. And it's funny because it was made maybe 20 years later. But he said that story is pretty accurate to what my oldest brother was saying at the time, that they did actually find the being and stuff. Yeah. So I don't know. Crazy.
He saw this thing firsthand, or he just knew about it?
He didn't say it himself. He didn't see it himself. He just knew about it. He was just saying, you know, there are things out there that we cannot explain. And he'd been stationed all over the world, but he was stationed in Cold Lake, Alberta. And he had got like a weird twitch in his eye because they were playing around with some stuff they shouldn't have been playing around with in Canada at that time, I assume. But so there was lots of things going on in the 70s that we didn't know about, that the world didn't know about. And, you know, it's unfortunate that he's passed and I can't ask him these things anymore. But it just kind of adds to my understanding that, you know, like he was such a you know, military guy to the T, that there was no way that he would lie about something if he didn't firmly believe it. He wouldn't.
So, I mean, that. You know, it's really interesting, like, because that's our sort of background of you know, where we're coming from. We've got 15 investigators on our team, which some pay, oh, that's a lot of people. But you can't always be, because we all have lives, we all have things to do, we all have other things that pay the rent. You can't have everybody coming out to one investigation at a time. So with that, things spread out, and before COVID, we were doing anywhere from 1 to 3 investigations a week. We can at least, everybody has the opportunity to go to an investigation and they feel that they're part of the team. But you can go into it and everybody's got a different, unique way of doing things, like I alluded to before, and you feed off of each other. Somebody might have come up with an idea or a question or an avenue to go down, and it sort of clicks in somebody else's mind that, ah, let's talk about that, or ask those questions, or let's have a discussion about that. So I find that very beneficial for especially our team, is that we can walk into that. And again, because of the ages throughout the group and the experience throughout the group, we have some of the people that have been around for a long time that you're trying different things when you go into a paranormal investigation. You're starting to go, let's go some old school stuff. You know, it doesn't have to be the bells and whistles and the new tech that cost you $4,000. Let's go to some of the old and maybe it's a flower on the floor, or maybe it's something else. And that makes it interesting, because you've got different ways of looking at a paranormal investigation. So that's, you know, and they've got their own stories. And I mean, we've got a lightning rod within our own group that if you're going into a paranormal investigation and there's something there that that might be a little dark, we've got one individual that for sure he's going to be the guy that gets touched or poked or scratched or anything like that. He's great. He's been around it the most. He's our historian that can walk into a room and tell you things about it before we get there. So it's always very interesting to get that background. But for sure, he's the guy that's going to get scratched, you know, if it happens.
Yeah.
I wonder why that is.
Because he's been doing it for 35 years, I think. And he's just, I have a belief that the more open you are to receiving the paranormal, the more they respond to you.
That's
so
true.
Maybe that's positive too. So because he's been exposed to different things and he's been through some stuff, they just go after him all the time.
He's like a beacon.
Yep. He is, and I'm okay with that. Thanks, but yeah.
Yeah, stays away from the rest of us.
He's away from me. Go pick on him. It's good.
So let me ask y'all a question of all the investigations you've done, and this could be at any given time, however long you've been doing it. It's just with anybody stories that you know, not just yours firsthand, but you know, even the stories that you have from other people. I got to ask this, okay? What is the most frightening for you guys?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, honestly, our group. And we've been together a few years now. I don't think we've really had a frightening experience per se. Okay, so to be, again, full disclosure, we don't go, you know, looking for trouble either, right? So we're not kind of the, dare I say it, Zach Bagans school of come out, demon, and hit me.
Yeah, start screaming and yelling and making threats and stuff.
Yeah, you know. Challenging him to a UFC fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, come at me, bro.
MMA chokehold.
No, so we're not...
Our guys don't get choked out, you know?
Well, that's a good thing, but I mean, so I got to ask this because, like, okay, I've been in a lot of haunted places, and I've talked about them on my show, and I've been a sensitive, but I'm of the belief that anyone can be a sensitive if you are, like you said, if you're open to it. I've always believed it. When I was a kid, I would see people that turn out to be probably not around anymore. In particular, when I was real small, it wasn't a traumatic experience at all. It wasn't anything. And I know, Anthony, you know this story. My mom has told it, how we lived in West Texas for a couple of years. My dad worked in power plants always. He was an engineer. And so we lived in this house, and there was this really pretty rose garden in the back. And there was a lady that I would see working in it periodically. And then the neighbors had told my mom one day about the lady that used to live there, that she had planted those. And of course, I was seeing her, but so was one of my sisters. So it was odd. I mean, you know, that you find out later on that, oh wait, that's not a living person in the way that we have a corporeal body. But she was very kind, and she could manipulate physical matter. She did pluck a rose, and so I don't really consider that anything like negative at all. She was always very friendly. I didn't actually see her in the house. I only saw her in the rose garden, and I did feel the presence sometimes in the house. But I was always like uneasy and I felt afraid. And in the house, I felt a male presence that would scare me. Once we remodeled it, for whatever reason, it stopped and I didn't feel afraid anymore. And I no longer saw the lady, but then I did live in a house after that where there was some stuff going on. And it was a male presence, but it was a harassing presence. It was this two-story house we lived in out in the country. And I recently took my wife and you, Anthony, we drove out there and we found it. And just looking at that house from the road, I was like, yeah, it still looks jacked up. I wouldn't want to be in that house. But nothing like too, like just, you know, nothing that was so terrifying, you know, like until years later, you know, when I got older, that's when I had a lot of these like more harrowing experiences. And I've always said that if something's there, I'll know. I can tell. Like, I can feel it. And a lot of times it'll interact. And there have been people with me when things have happened, when we've interacted with these things. But you guys go out on location and you actively look for this. Now, I don't actually do that. I don't go anywhere and look, as you guys say, for trouble. But there has to be some times when, you know, you guys being open to it, that you've been, man, I got to get the heck out of here. I mean, something's here and it's terrifying.
Well, I think it's all, And again, we might be fortunate, and I think there's a lot of them out there, depending on the teams. But it's just like going into a meeting. Okay, if you've got, you know, and it's a breakfast meeting and there's six people there and it's not paranormal, it's just the regular day-to-day job, and one person just didn't have their Wheaties in the morning, so they're kind of pissed off. You'll go into that meeting because that one person is not, you know, upbeat or anything like that. That meeting goes on forever. Same meeting, same principles. Everybody's had their cup of coffee in the morning. Things are good. You walk into that meeting, you do your thing, you walk out. It's like nothing ever happened. It's like that meeting wasn't there. It all depends. I think it all truly depends on the people coming into the investigation. If they're upbeat about it and positive energy, I think it reflects back with whatever location that you're going to. We had a location that's in the lower mainland that we had gone to before our investigators, three of them, before they even got there, and two of them, yeah, they're mediums and one's a sensitive, but before they even got there, they were starting to feel anxious. They were starting to feel, you know, the shivers. They were starting to, you know, have a nauseous feeling coming in before they even got there. So when they got there, it's like, yeah, they knew we were coming. And so, but we had a really good paranormal experience about it, and it was pretty exciting stuff. But I really, truly believe it's the energy that you bring to an investigation. I really do.
The one thing we do too is when we go into a facility or a home, we make it really clear to the spirits why we're there. Most cases for us have been business places. So the people that work there are kind of like, we're kind of okay with them here. We just want people to tell us we're not crazy. And so they're not asking us to ask the spirits to leave. So when we go to the meeting and we do our opening, you know, kind of mantra to say, you know, we're here. We respect your space. We know you're here. We're here to talk to you. We're not here to ask you to leave. We're going to leave everything in the same way we found it, and we're respecting your space, and we ask you to respect ourselves as well. And we do the closing mantra, which is very similar at the end. So that's in one scenario. And I really believe that I have to be honest with the spirit when I walk into a room. If it is a situation where they're not happy with the spirit, then we don't say that, because the last thing I want to do is to go in there under false pretenses and say, yeah, we're here, we're not going to do anything, and then now we're going to try to get rid of you.
And one of the things that we might do that's maybe a little bit different than other paranormal teams, I'm not sure. I mean, again, we're talking about being open, unity and things like that. But one of the things and it happens wherever we go, is that we invite, which if we're going into a business, we invite whoever we've contacted to come on in, plus whoever else is interested. So you have that connection. If there's a spirit, ghost, or entity there or whatever, that entity will have relationship with that individual coming in. So it's not just, hey, give us the keys, we'll go in, we'll do our thing, we'll come back to you, here's what we got. They actually take ownership in what we're doing. And so they can ask the questions and they can feel comfortable about it. So if they come to us and say, I've got this thing happening in my place, they're actually there to find out if they have this thing in their place. So it makes it really unique and enjoyable for them to be part of it.
Yeah. And we were on another talk show once, and the host was an ex-cop, and he was saying, so when you go in a building and you say this stuff, what makes you think that, you know, what you're saying is going to work? Like, who are you to say just because you say, you know, we're not here, they're going to like lay off you and stuff? I go, well, they're kind of our paranormal Miranda rights. You know, we don't know if we need them, but we're going to say them just in case, right? Because that's the best we could do at this point. But we've been lucky. And so far, you know, we haven't had anything, at least follow me home or follow you home. But again, it's a very distinct difference of why we're there and what we're going to do. If it is a place where a spirit has to be removed, we do have people on our team that excel in that, and they'll take a very different scenario. But that's usually like the second or third visit to the location once we've established that there's kind of something nasty going on. Because most of the time, there really isn't. It's just kind of, hey, I'm here, you know, acknowledge me, I'll leave you alone, just, you know. Just they're going to run some water just to scare you, and don't worry about it. So
one of the questions that we get all the time is that, aren't you afraid? Aren't you afraid of getting in there and doing this? And my question to them, because I know right off the bat that they're maybe a little bit apprehensive about what we're doing, is that we're so busy with our equipment or concentrating or asking our questions or doing what we need to do that you don't have the time to go back and say, geez, I'm feeling really, you know, I'm feeling really bad about this. So I think it's a real good combination of both of them. It's just like you, Josh, and your home and the person outside, you must have had that connection or some sort of positive experience with it. If it was because then you felt that that wasn't a negative thing and you found it that it was a positive thing, right? It's probably because you had that connection with that spirit, ghost, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Have there been times when we've had to say the spirit back off? Yeah. But luckily they've backed off. Like if somebody starts to feel physically ill, it'll be like, move back, get back, stay away from that person. And they seem to feel better afterwards.
And we've had that.
Yeah.
Do you believe that there are, this is a question I've asked other ghost investigators and they've almost always answered it in one way. So I'm curious how you guys see it, but do you believe that there are rules that they have to follow?
Define rules.
Do you think that there is a rule like set, like that's why we're not attacked by demons on a regular basis? That's why we're not physically, are they not allowed? Are they not supposed to? Do you think there's some sort of rules? Most ghost hunters that I've talked to will say that they do believe that there is some sort of parameter of rules that keeps things in place.
Like certain limitations, certain boundaries
they can't cross.
I think
kind of like I alluded when, you know, when my relatives died, I wasn't supposed to get a direct message from them. But having said that, I think that as technology changes and we're able to tune into other frequencies and investigate in other ways, it's kind of like there's these little slips that happen that, you know, maybe we weren't really supposed to see, but we saw. And that's a whole new genre for us, for lack of a better word, for sure.
Well, have you guys seen this? There's an app that you can get now. It's been out for a few years. I think it's called like a Ghost Finder app. Now, there's a guy. I think there's two or three different ones now. I don't know. Anthony, do you know anything about these? You know more about apps than I do. But there was a Ghost Finder app. Okay, he says no.
No, I haven't heard of it.
Yeah, there was a guy that worked at one of our properties, and it was a pretty bad property. And he was a really nice guy, but he was telling me and my wife when we were on the property back in December, he told us a pretty crazy story. Like he downloaded one of these ghost apps and he used it. And he was out in a town near Hutto when this happened. And Hutto is weird. The area around Hutto has had some dogman sightings in that. It's right outside of my hometown in that area in between there and Taylor. We've gotten two or three reports of dogman. Now, I do have a relative that she lived right outside of Hutto in the north of Hutto, and she had some activity that would go on. Her son, when he was little, was seeing spirits and things. And so I've heard of activity in that area. And now I know that they're building now. They're disturbing the ground, and they're building big time in that area. So this guy that lived at this property was in that area where they were developing it. And he used that ghost app, Ghost Finder app, and it actually showed red, I guess, on there. Like, that's what he was saying. And it, like, whatever that was, it came to him, and he said that he could feel it like static electricity. And he said that it was palpable. I mean, like, you could almost touch it. And he said that it was right there, and that he would ask it questions with this app or whatever, and it would answer it. You know, it was saying, it was, like, responding. So
I wonder whether that's like whether because he believed in it, it was more open to him. Because I personally hate them. I think I don't get anything out of these apps. But we have people on our team who do. So again, maybe it's just because I'm so anti-app that they don't kind of connect with me that way. But for other people, they seem to get significant answers.
It's just like the ovulus, which is, you know, catches phrases or words out of the air, basically. And there's your, well, I think it's obvious five that's out now. Obvious three is probably one of the best, but no plug there. But you've got other individuals that download the app and will able to get spirit messages that way. I think it's all depending on how you want to do it. Like Janine says, it's if you believe in it, it might be a good thing. I'm not sure. It's just like the other is the an all-in-one ghost app that has come out, and you can have your K2 in there, your temperature readings and things like that. If it's somebody just starting out and they just want to find out a little bit about it, sure. Do you have to get a hell of a lot of spend a lot of money to be a paranormal investigator? No. I firmly believe in starting out, like, get a good digital recorder. Paranormal investigators, and whether it's ghosts or other things, that's probably where you're going to get the best evidence right off the bat. And then get a camera or whether it's a recorder or just a normal camera, take shots of everything. You never know what you're going to catch.
We were investigating in a church one time, and those are always interesting, I might add. And somebody had an app, because we're just getting back to the app for a second, and all of a sudden it goes, demon. And I'm like, no, we're in the middle of a church. It's not a demon. So I dismissed that. But on the other hand, I have a REM pod in front of me, and I go, can I get an amen? And the thing goes off. And I go, okay, can I get another amen? And the thing went off again. So, you know, again, maybe it's what you're in tune to. I can't prejudge what other people feel. Maybe that's my narrow-mindedness over these apps. It might be.
Well, how many do you guys collect EVPs?
Yes.
One of the best ones we had, I think, was involving a small child in the basement of a heritage museum.
Yeah, that was fun.
And we for sure thought that we had children around us, especially a young girl. Our equipment that we had set up, and you've seen the equipment, K2s and REM pods and things like that, they were going off. It's a basement of this, there's dirt floor that we're in, okay?
We're talking pioneer structure.
Yeah. So we've got this all set up. We're asking our, can you make the objects react? It does. It goes up for different, we ask. It's a intelligent responses that we're getting to our questions. And then the best EVP was.
Yeah. So all these lights and bells and whistles are going off. And I'm like, it's a kid. Because this kid is like, he's whoever is into it. And they're turning off all the bells and whistles that we had one after the other. And I said, you see that light? You see how the light doesn't hurt you? And we don't hear it at the time. But after, as we're listening back, this little voice goes, no. And that was very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It was a class A EVP. Yeah, and it was amazing.
And at that same place, we took an SN on another occasion. And because we'd had this encounter before, I brought Peter Pan. And so I sat down at one of the little school desks and I started reading Peter Pan. And an adult figure picked up and kind of came to listen to the story. So that was also very cool.
And it wasn't, we can dismiss some of the SLS recordings and because we know what they're, we know what we're looking at.
A hat rack or whatever.
It's just like we're at what's left of an old penitentiary that was here. And there's a building that's the only thing that's left. And it was the main gate for the prisoners. They had to go through this, and there was jail cells in the bottom and everything's like that. By the way, there's seven spirits in his particular location. And we were upstairs in what was going to be a ballroom of some sort, still under construction. And we had the SLS and we were going around to different areas. And we caught this one figure up against the wall. And they started having, Janine and this other investor, they start having conversation with this. And it seemed to have a problem with its leg.
Yes.
And then...
So I had said to it, is there a problem with your leg? Because he was keeping the leg really, really straight through this encounter. And as soon as I said, is there a problem with your leg? All of a sudden the leg started to bend. And then so our other colleague at the time said, can you wrap on the wall? And so the hand came up and kind of knocked on the wall. So that's when the SLS becomes really interesting when you get direct interaction to questions you are asking. And that's when you go, okay, I can't explain this because that's not the SLS picking up a lamppost, because this thing is reacting to what we're asking it. And that's really, really fascinating to me. And that's when I get into the interdimensional thing going on that I can't explain, but it's just very, very cool.
We've got an individual that is associated with us that he's probably one of the leading ITC or spirit box people in North America. Mm. He gets calls from around the world. And his name is Bill Hauser. So if you ever get a chance, Google him and take him looking up or check him out on Facebook. He's freaking amazing. And what he does with the spirit box is way cool. There's different types of spirit boxes out there, but he's got the one that's not as noisy, so to speak. It does a really good job about it, and he knows how to manipulate it and have it work. So,
do you want to explain that to the listeners exactly what that is?
So the ghost box or the ITC system kind of works like obviously it scans a radio frequency. So if you were listening to it and it was a noisy version, you would hear and you hear bits and pieces of radio stations as you're listening to it. So you might hear a little bit of a car commercial, you might hear a little bit of a talk show going on, but it's going very, very fast. So every once in a while, when you filter out that noise, a voice will come through that has nothing to do with what's really happening on the radio frequencies. And that's what he's listening for, to find something that's answering his questions, but it's not just pareidolia, like just happenstance. So it's kind of interesting when he actually gets a direct response. Like he'll say, you know, what color shirt am I wearing? And then something, you know, it'll scan it's kind of like the movie Christine, if you saw it, when the radio was just going crazy. It's kind of like listening to that. But in all that noise, it'll go black. And then he'll go, okay, that's something else coming through.
But we're talking mostly about ghosts and spirits and things like that. We've got individuals that are part of our team that have, you know, been actually somewhere and talked about and have seen UFOs or things that they can't explain. That it's not something satellite or anything like that, and it's gone from mountain to mountain and in the middle of a wilderness while camping. Or we've got other individuals that have reacted or interacted with Sasquatch. There is one of the tribes is that's close to, again in the Fraser Valley, but to them Sasquatch is their god. It's something that they're so believing about it that it's who they believe in. So any disrespect to talking about Sasquatch or anything like that is disrespecting the tribe as a whole. And they're an interesting group to talk to because they've had their experiences. We've talked to we've interviewed and talked with individuals. We haven't had that ability to be on an investigation where we've caught Sasquatch, but we're talking with people and investigating their relationships and their one individual we were talking to, and they it was heavy snow and they were going up to their house and it was at night, it was very, very dark, and it was her and her son. And they got up to the house and she said, well, go up and open the garage door so I can get it in. And they were trying. So he comes back and they could hear this noise and this howling that they couldn't explain. And sure enough, it was a Sasquatch that was very close and actually more interested in them than what they experienced. There's another individual. His name's Thomas Seawitt. And he has a Facebook page called Sasquatch Island. Very, very upbeat and interesting individual about Sasquatch or the Buckwhus that he calls. And he's got tales. He goes all the time. Again, on Vancouver Island, it's in the northern part. He goes to areas that normal, a lot of people just don't go, and he does a lot of fishing and trapping, and he is Aboriginal. So he's got that background, and the stories he's got to tell is incredible. In fact, Janine did an interview on for a thing called that she does called Supernatural Sunday, and it's
on YouTube.
And it's pretty interesting about how he talks about it and the flavor that he talks about. I would absolutely have everybody that wants to talk about Sasquatch or anything. No, he's not a team member. Don't get me wrong. He's just a really interesting individual, and it's called Sasquatch Island. Yeah. So it's a cool place to go look at.
So that brings me to one of my questions for you guys. What are your thoughts on Sasquatch? Just focusing on that for a second. As ghost hunters per se, looking at the paranormal, looking at supernatural, like what is Sasquatch to you? Is it a physical being? Could it be interdimensional? Is it a does it move between the worlds? What is it?
Oh, you hit this one.
Yeah, I love this question. So I really, really, really want to believe there's Sasquatch. I really do. I'm not a big fan of the Patterson film. I don't think that one's real. But I don't know, Josh. Like, is it something trying to connect with us that doesn't quite get the human form and just wants to, you know, kind of... Yeah, that's a good question. Is it an alien trying to be a human? Like, I don't know.
I mean,
I kind of want to believe that, but I don't know.
I mean, we're finding species all the time, new species all the time. Is it because there was the bridge coming across, the reconnection coming from Eurasia and that neck of the Maybe. Woods coming across the bridge at one time, and now has never evolved, so to speak, and is in has that ability to be part of nature, be part of the. I mean, up here in Canada, we've got a hellacious amount of wilderness that has never been explored. It's like the Pacific Northwest. I mean, there's been Sasquatch sightings all around Washington State and down to Oregon and that. So it's even California for that matter. Again, where a lot of the public hasn't had the ability to, or is it's not as frequent. So there's that. I think that it's that missing link. And
I mean, what's the big obstacle? Because they didn't think that was real either until they discovered it was. So I mean, there's still lots of things on this planet that we don't know exist for sure.
Well, there was one time that we took a spirit box to a Bigfoot investigation, and it was like, you know, I asked it a very specific question, and I was like, you know, who are you? What are you? You know, what do you do? What do you like? And it was like, don't like beef jerky. And I was, I'm messing with you. I'm messing with Sasquatch. No, just kidding. And then I asked, like, is anything else? And it's like, you're fat. And I was like, what? And that was the end of that. I threw away that thing. It must've been broken, but yeah. Now, I've had people that are spiritual mediums, and I have a guy that's going to come on the show soon. We've been kicking it around. He's a remote viewer, and I got him doing an assignment to remote view Bigfoot and remote view Dogman. A lot of what you'd be surprised, a lot of what people who are in your line of work who have talked to me, they're not necessarily 100% that it's a spiritual entity. Most of what I'm getting from that side of the field is that it's something interdimensional.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of leaning that way. It's I don't know.
Moving in and out of our world, we talked to Linda Godfrey, a dear friend of mine. She's a very nice woman. She's done a lot of Dogman research, written a lot of books, and we were talking, and she said that she's of the opinion now, like Dogman and Bigfoot in particular, like that they are physical beings when they're on this plane of existence, whereas they have to hunt, they have to kill and eat deer or whatever. But that's because they're on this plane of existence, and then they can move back and forth. I know that one of the things that I'm seeing now, and I'm going to do a show about this soon, and I have no other term for it other than a shimmer man or a glimmer man. I kind of don't want to call it Glimmer Man because that's like the name of a movie, or whatever. But but it is a glimmering, like shimmering type thing. There was a guy years ago that I had a business lunch with, and he was an ex-military. He was trying to. I had a couple connections with guys that knew some people in the military, and they were trying to broker a deal with this guy. And so I sat in on this business meeting, and this guy told me a really terrifying story. I'm not going to get into it because we're going to talk about it on a show at some point with another guest. But he talked about this entity that was 8 to 9 feet tall, but it was invisible, but he could see it at certain angles in the moonlight. And it had this glimmer quality to it. And he was convinced that it was some sort of Sasquatch type entity, but that it had been sicked on him and that it was trying to attack him or kill him. And one of the things I've learned over the years of this, all this research, and I've done a ton of it, and is that these Sasquatch entities, there are vast array of different types of these entities, ranging from humanoid looking almost like human, to ape-like. And some of them are something in between, almost like a spiritual. There have been people that have played with Ouija boards and have summoned one of these things. It was like a black, demonic-looking gorilla, as these ladies described it to me. It happened when they were young girls, but they were in their 40s when they told me the story. And it was like a gorilla, but it was like appearing in their – at first, it was appearing outside the house, which made them think that maybe it wasn't connected to their use of the Ouija board. But then it was appearing inside the house, and there was no forced entry. It was just there. And they eventually got a couple of ghost hunters like you guys to come in and do some readings, and this thing communicated, and it said that and it said point blank Ouija board, like that's one of the things it said, like it told them like where it came from, like they opened something up and it walked right through.
I mean, you get people, the naysayers, that say, well, it doesn't exist again, but. If you think about it, like they want, show me evidence. It's just like what we do. It's just, it's the whole gauntlet of things. But if you show me the evidence, well, okay, we're going to take you when you die. We're going to throw you in the forest, and we're going to come back in a couple of years and see if there's anything left. And it's just the same thing. Well, how come there's no bodies? How come this has happened? And come on, really? If you die in the forest, there's not going to be anything left of you over time.
Have you ever seen a squirrel carcass? Yeah, no.
Very rarely. Well, and out here in the city, you do. They're squished on the road. But I mean, in the woods, though,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you don't see. You're right, Paul. What you're saying, though, it's like very, very, very good point. Like I've never heard or seen pictures of even a dead bear. I mean, they exist. People get chased by them or attacked, whatever. People have some photos, I mean, but, a creature like Sasquatch, and I argued with someone recently about that. They're like, well, you can see photos of bears and videos, but not Sasquatch. Well, one of the things, too, Sasquatch are smart. So if they want to avoid people and avoid cameras, they can. I mean, why wouldn't they be able to? Whereas a bear is not as cognizant as, oh, this is a camera and it's pointing it at me. Bears are brazen and they're not as smart. They'll just walk right up to people, walk up to their house. Bigfoot, you point a gun at them and they know what that is. Like I've heard of people like hunters, standing Bigfoot off with guns, and they get away because they pointed a gun at this thing and the thing knew what it was. And it went, okay, you have a gun, and it went away. Bear doesn't really do that. Bear doesn't look at the gun and go, oh, that's a gun, I better run. No, you can shoot at it a couple times and maybe get it to retreat. But I think that the intelligence level is something that's very important. And I've gotten a lot of weird reports, too, of these things being of a celestial nature, too. I know that Barton Nunley, in his book, Inhumanoids, Anthony? I always forget which.
I believe it's Inhumanoids.
Inhumanoids. And Nunley wrote this really good book. Folks, you go pick it up. It's a really good book. I'm sure you could probably find it on Amazon. But there's a story in there. And I covered it on one of our shows, too, like how these creatures could be of extraterrestrial origin or ultra-terrestrial or interdimensional in some form or another, because they have been seen piloting craft and doing things. And they look like Bigfoot. They look like a Sasquatch-type creature. it could just be a coincidence that there could be an alien species or some sort of interdimensional species that looks like them. But it sounds like to me that there could be a connection there too. Maybe this the Bigfoot, and one of my theories is that they could have been seeded here, and then they were left and just, you know, or, you know, like my friend Ken Gerhard, he fully believes that they're a physical creature that's running around out there, and that they're a relic population, species, throwback, whatever. Or it could be all of the above, you know. And I know that when you're playing with a Ouija board, which was another one of my questions for you guys, how often do you go deal with cases that are spurred by the use of Ouija boards?
They're not really prevalent in the Lower Mainland. Say that, though, I'm a child of the 60s, and I had one, and I'm proud of it. But, you know, it was a whole different thing about that. No, we don't get people playing with Ouija boards up here. No. We don't.
Really?
Oh, good for y'all.
No, we really don't.
Does it open things? I think it's all in the belief of the individual.
Hmm.
I think if they're doing, and at least for us, I'm not saying that's the standard for everybody out there, because some people get the heebie-jeebies, or this is the worst thing since burning the toast. But I don't think we've ran across that.
No, we haven't.
You know, as a team, or as, you know, we put that out there, and again, that's something about the group, is that we've always put that out there. If you've got a question, ask it. It might not get the answer that you're looking for, but at least you're going to get the conversation from everybody around that has that as of interest.
We do have a member, Catherine Grace, who does seances and uses a planchette, which is very similar, and she gets really, really interesting results from that. Yeah. But yeah, a little bit different. More tabletop and directing towards individual questions, not with a Ouija board per se. But yeah.
Yeah, I think when it comes to the validity of whether or not a Ouija board will work with certain people, it might not just be whether or not you believe, but it could also be the energy that you bring to the table. Because let's say a really negative person who is just generally a malcontent in life or whatever, they bring people down around them and they don't believe in anything, but they play with a Ouija board. Well, whatever's on the other side could be attracted to the energy that they're bringing to the table right there. Yeah, that negativity is something to feed on. It's like a good little snack for them.
Well, that's what we said at the very beginning, is that it's all depends on the energy that's around.
Yeah.
If we're kind of fortunate. We're very fortunate with our team, is that we're going to a place and our team is we're generally upbeat, and if anybody is not having a great day, we should say, hey, you know what? Don't be part of this, because
exactly
we want to make sure that we're going in there. We're not, like Janine says, we're not there to poke the bear. We don't want to come into a situation and just make it more
miserable.
Worse,
yeah,
than before. And we're just there to find out and have the curiosity about what's happening, and see if we can prove, disprove, or anything happening. It's just like UFOs. And here's a question I'm going to throw this back at you. But for us, there is the belief that with people staying at home and everything that's happening over the last few months, is that the UFO sightings will go up substantially, because people are in their backyards having a beer, looking up at the sky. And if they're, you know, out in the country and they're able to see, you know, the stars going by, and it's not a satellite or a meteorite or anything that's happening, and they're suddenly seeing these, you know, things that are changing direction and going in a not a normal way. Do you believe that same thing is happening in the States?
Probably people in the States will shoot at it. that's and especially in Texas, like, is that a disc in the sky? Kill it. Kill it. No, I'm just kidding. No,
they'll get the deer bag from Safeway, and yeah.
Kill it. It's coming straight for us. You know, one of the things I've noticed as of late is that before this COVID thing happened, I'll say the last year since I had my show, When I used to get reports mostly of Dogman, because I did a lot of work with Vic Cundiff on Dogman Encounters, and I had kind of a deal with him where, you know, I was just focusing on that, and I was getting people's reports who didn't feel like being able to talk on his show. And so people would send me their encounters if they didn't want to talk, you know, and I could go on and do their encounters for them. And I met a lot of people, and a lot of those people had other paranormal experiences. But of course, Dogman Encounters is strictly for Dogman Encounters. But a lot of those people had UFO encounters. They had ghost stuff going on. They had other paranormal activity going on in their houses. And so one of the things, and I'll make this point, is that I noticed there was a lot of, I was getting 4 to 5 reports maybe every week. You know, I would, and of those, you might be able to use one or two, you know, for something. Then it ramped up. When I started my show, I was getting like, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7 reports a week of different types of paranormal activity. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm getting 2, 3 reports a day right now. During the COVID thing, it like jumped up. I was getting 1, 2 a day, you know, of just different stuff every day I wake up. And I'm talking 1 or 2 that are show worthy. You know what I mean? That's what I'm getting at. And now I'm getting 3, 4 reports that I can't even keep up. I'm actually going and giving other podcasters like my overflow. I'm like, do you talk to these witnesses? I just can't keep up with the number of things that are going on. I spent, I'd say, what, about 6 hours yesterday, Anthony, just interviewing people?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it was 5 people, 1 or 2, I guess, that couldn't really talk, and then I decided they weren't real good orators, but they had a good story, and they could write it out for me. But the others were actually very good at talking, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to start bringing more eyewitness guests on, because if someone's willing to talk about it, I'll bring them on the podcast and let them tell their stories. People love to hear firsthand accounts, and these people were telling me, the one guy, he had, you know, a Ouija board experience, a UFO experience. You know, he had like 2 or 3 different things that happened to him. And you're getting that more and more often. I don't know what's going on. There's a psychic friend of mine that she thinks that the veil is thinning. She says that it's being perforated or punctured. And we're starting to see that, you know, and that's what's happening. I think COVID has facilitated it too. Like people having more time on their hands and not working.
Yeah. I think the more downtime you have, the more you're able to perceive the world around you, as opposed to just being in it and going through the motions.
Absolutely. Because people are shutting off the TV because they don't want to hear the noise. you know, and they're wanting to do other things. So maybe, okay, I've got this time now, I'm going to meditate. I haven't meditated before, but I'm going to meditate. And suddenly that brings maybe a different level in their spirituality that they never had before. And then suddenly it's, oh, I'm actually going on another journey here. So yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, is that everybody is got this, their time on their hands, unless they're an essential worker, sorry, Janine, they're being able to talk about more things, or maybe they're having more an in-depth conversation with their partner that they didn't have before, and it's opened up some other things. And that's one of the reasons why I asked the question, is because we're finding that up here.
That's actually very, very poignant, what you just said. Go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry for interrupting, but that's very...
And I think we're just getting more and more of that type of activity, so to speak, or that reality that we haven't had before. And so if you're talking to somebody that maybe you talked to before and was never part, like, we'll go into, you go into work, and some of us will not even tell the people we work with what we do.
Oh yeah.
Because they'll think you're just, you know, lock you up, throw away the key, and thanks very much. But now, I've got this story to tell you, or I've got this thing. Can I deal with it? Or what's your recommendation regarding that? And we're not the be all to end all, but the curiosity definitely has increased.
Yeah, what you just said makes a lot of sense. I was talking to someone the other day, and he was saying that him and his wife were virtually workaholics. that they were working all the time. She had a career and he had a career. And these are actually friends of mine. But they experienced some paranormal activity. And one of the things that she said, she had told him, you know, because she had a job 15 years and all of a sudden it was just like gone, just like that. It was just done. There was no more. And then he got laid off from his job. And so they're both just kind of like there, you know, they don't really have anything going on. And they started talking and he was like, it's like we were catching up after all these years. And he said that we started talking and he had experienced a couple little paranormal things and their daughter had experienced some stuff. And it had been going on for 3 or 4 years and him and his wife had never even had time to stop and compare notes.
Or even talk about it or find that out about the other individual.
Yeah, they didn't even really know. They knew that their daughter was experiencing it. But when they started talking one day, he was like, we were like, whoa, this is, we're both having these experiences. They were seeing a shadow type thing that was moving in and out of the closet area, a closet, he said, in the hallway and then in the daughter's room. And the daughter was complaining to them, but he had never even really had the time, working 60 hours a week, his wife doing the same, and then moving up in the career ladder and whatever. And then now he's like, we're seeing it. We're experiencing it. And it's like, we have time to sit here. And so now they can tell me all this stuff about it because they have all this time on their hands. So the COVID thing has definitely, it's ramped up like as far as getting the activity. I don't think it's made the activity go up. I just think that people have more time on their hands to give you the stories and tell you what's going on. Like I'm busy like every day now getting stories. And luckily my job affords me to do that. I have to go out and make rounds every night and check on my guards. I'm pretty much like, it's what I do every night, but I also get time. I take time every evening now to collect stories and try to, you know, my notebooks are filling up again. And I'm just like, wow, this is crazy. The COVID thing is really just, like you said, people have time to sit in their backyard and look up in the sky and see UFOs. I've gotten a lot more UFO reports. I've gotten a lot more Bigfoot reports, people going out into the bush. They're going camping because they don't want to be in the towns and the cities full of people. So they don't want to get the plague. So they go out into the woods and to get away. And so that's a lot of this is, and I've gotten some really weird stories too out of it too, that, you know, I had filed away under some threads and now I'm pulling them and I'm going like, oh, here we go. These are coming around too, you know? And so it's given me a lot of material, a lot of time to gather material, for our podcast. The one thing though, I do, it bothers me, when I talk to a witness and I can't really do anything for them other than go, oh, well, that's a good story. Let me go and put it on my show. Because I mean, like you guys actually perform, I guess, kind of a service. Like you go to people's houses, and you actually investigate, you know, facilities and things like that, and you actually do an actual physical like investigation. That's commendable. I'm going to tell you something. When I was living in the house I lived in a house for like a decade. If everybody knows my show, knows this. I brought several guests onto the show to talk about their experiences that took place in that house so that people know, not only for entertainment purposes to bring it on because, you know, it's good for the show, but like also to show everyone that this really happened. This stuff really happens to people, really happened to me. And the other day, my wife made a comment. She said, you know, the one of the unique things about your paranormal experiences, 90% of it can be corroborated by other people. And she herself has talked to the other people that have been involved in the things that have gone on paranormally around me. I saw a dog man when I was 15. The guy I saw it with, my wife's met him. Anthony, you know him. He's a preacher in my hometown.
Yeah.
And he's very, you know, at graduation, you know, last year he told my wife the story and she was like, wow, that exactly matches what you've told me all these years. And the house I lived in, several of my friends, one that passed away recently, talked to my wife and told her their experiences and what went on in that house. And she was like, you could write a book just based on what went on there. Recently I was on, I'm going to be on Travel Channel, a show that I just recorded for recently. And while I was recording for that, there's another friend of mine that was with me that was involved in that incident. We did the episode called the Church of the Forgotten. That's what we named it. Anthony, you named it.
the Church of the Forgotten.
And it was a place out here in Texas where we did security. And we had a lot of weird stuff happen to us out there. Not just me, but like several people that were involved in that. And one in particular, he goes on the show with me. Well, while we're recording, we hear this loud bang, bang. And the producer and the director were sitting there going like, what was that? And we're looking around and I'm like, and it was weird because it happened while I was giving them the story. And so, you know, I don't know if some people are just prone to experiencing these things or if it's something that's just random. I don't really think it's random because, you know, it's been around me my whole life, you know, and in certain periods of my life, it's been I'm more susceptible to it. Do I think that something follows me around? No, I don't. I think that it's, you know, wherever it's at, if it's there, I'm going to feel it. I'm going to sense it, maybe even see it. And it's always been like that. And at times I've learned to kind of tune it out. But I think that being in this line of work, or if you want to call it work now, it's kind of become a second job. I've actually met so many other people who've had the same situation that I've had. And I had an investigator come to our old house because I had a roommate at that time who had only been there for a couple of weeks, and he was skeptical. And my brother was like, okay, give it time. Because my brother kind of made fun of it a little bit too until it hit him in the face. So he was like, yeah, just go ahead and keep making fun, dude. You know. And so this guy thought he was cute, so he brought a paranormal team. Like, he actually got them to come. They were from San Antonio, and they came to Austin, and they set up or whatever. And halfway through it, they were absolutely convinced. They were like, you have an absolute infestation here of something. And they were adamant that it was real. I mean, they had orbs and all kinds of stuff. We let them sit in our house for a night, and we all worked downtown at a nightclub, and we came back, and they were pretty convinced that it was. And one of the investigators actually got physically ill and left. Now, that didn't happen to us, like nothing like making us ill, but I think that depending on the sensitivity, you know, so that friend of ours, he thought, well, these people may, you know, he wasn't convinced until something literally like basically assaulted him, you know, when he was in the bathroom. And I told him, I said, yeah, there you go. I mean, and it was always like based on people taunting it or messing with it or antagonizing it. And then it would do something. 100% of the time it did it. It would literally go after people when you mocked it or made fun of it. It would hurt you. I mean, it would literally physically like grab people and do stuff. Now, it didn't really do that much to me physically, but it did like my dog got into it with one of these things. And so, you know, this guy was hearing these stories, and I wasn't even the one telling them. It was like Scorpion, Squid, Diablo, my guys that worked with us and lived with us, and they were telling this guy, and he was like, yeah, I don't believe in none of that. So he was like, I got a friend who she believes in all that. So she got in touch with these ghost hunters, and they came to the house, but they couldn't really do anything for us. But I mean, they did confirm that it was real. And then when something happened to him, which I say assaulted, he wasn't really assaulted. Something touched him, you know, in his head, and it scared him. And so he fled and he never came back. But he was a believer. And whenever I'd see him downtown, he worked downtown for years, he would always be like, oh man, his house was haunted. And he didn't believe it until something happened to him.
See, and here's the other thing too, is like, because of COVID and people have this time and they're in the backyards having a beer or whatever like that, there's also, okay, well, and the amount of paranormal shows that are on now is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're flipping through the channel and you suddenly see that, that's kind of, you know, whatever, and you haven't had that activity or anything like that, people are, you know, they're Googling, they're going on Facebook, they're searching for different groups and places and just for the curiosity, whether they believe or not. But now, okay, I'm slightly curious about this particular thing. I'm going to look at that because I have the time to do that. It's just like one of the things that we're very proud of is the fact that our Facebook page is private. And we make it so that people can come in, ask their questions, have the conversations, and not be ridiculed about it. And I think that's extremely important, especially if you have somebody that's coming out so to speak, for the first time about talking about the paranormal and has a question that might be normal for you and me, Josh, or Janine and Anthony, is that, okay, well, we take it with just, you know, water off the duck's back. We know what we're talking about. But for them to ask that question is like, it's life. I need to know about this. So they want to, we want to make sure that they're comfortable with that and they can ask that. And I get PM'd about it, you know, geez, I'd like to talk about this. And if they're really, really uncomfortable, I'll do it for them, so to speak, and make it as a conversation piece. But we encourage people to do that so that they can get into their inner fears and not have to be worried about everybody being negative about it. Yeah, you're going to have that little bit, and I get that, because everybody's got their own beliefs. But let's make it so that people can have that conversation and talk about it from around the world, because, you know, experiences here happen in Australia, that happen in England, that happen in Papua New Guinea. I mean, it's everywhere. And so it might be a little bit of a different version at times, but then the conversation evolves. It becomes, I've got to talk about, oh, well, geez, I can talk about this. This happened to me because, and you're talking about it, so now I can open up about it. So it grows. And I think that that's all happening more so now, whether it's, Josh, you getting all the reports and all the stories on a day-to-day basis, or us getting, you know, requests for investigations, or, geez, you got to come over to this house, than ever before. I think it's all evolving. I think it really is.
Yeah, ironically, making a living can severely get in the way of actually living life and perceiving it. And now that people are, like you said, have a lot more downtime, they're able to pay a little bit more attention to the world. And I think they're perceiving it more and realizing, wow, this is actually a stranger place than what I've always believed.
And that's true. I think that, and you've got to be able to nurture that and have that grow, because and it's got to be beyond just their imagination that I think I'm seeing this. I'm crazy. You know, maybe there's something else that I know for a fact, but for them, maybe there's something else that I can't explain. And let me see if I can find an answer to it somehow. It might not be the right one, because, you know, there's, God knows, there's a whole bunch of things out there that that people make up, or, and that gets back to having, when we do an investigation, that the people come along with us, because I don't want to be that team that goes, okay, give us the keys, we'll go in, we'll do an investigation, we're going to come out and tell you what's there, and you're going to believe me because, hey, I told you, and we're a paranormal investigator. I think, come on, you got to be able to have that interaction so that they can, like I said, have that ownership. And being able to participate in it, you can see it on their face. Yeah, you give them the evidence that you capture afterwards with things we can't hear, or give them the story of Sasquatch or UFOs, and they're able to react and say, "Geez, I've had that activity too, or I've seen that a similar object."
Do you guys, Paul, let me ask you a question. Do you and Janine, do y'all feel like you've helped a lot of people with your investigations?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not, like we say, we're not the be-all, end-all to things, but in 80% of the cases or investigations we go on, the people just want validation that the things they think are going on are really going on and they're not crazy. And so if you go there and you're able to record a few things, like, yeah, that is making a weird noise, there are footsteps when nobody's upstairs, then they go, okay, so I'm not crazy. Like, no, but, and again, it's not causing you any harm, whatever it is. So, you know, there's no reason to be concerned at this point, but yeah, you're really hearing what you think you're hearing.
But here's the thing, we'll go into a place that's had reports of all of this paranormal activity. So you get asked to come in and do your investigation and find out and see it is, see what's there. And you'll come out and say, geez, there's nothing there. We never got anything, except maybe the squirrels chasing the raccoons outside.
It does happen, yeah.
But we'll go into other locations that have had absolutely no paranormal activity whatsoever. But, you know, it's a historic location. The person that the curator or whatever like that, you know, and kind of believes in what we're doing, come on in and have a look around, and we'll come out of there and have some of the best paranormal. That's a location we did in the middle of the day, and there had not been any reports of paranormal activity there.
So, folks, that's going to do it for tonight with Cornerstone Supernatural. We'll be back next week to finish up with them. And don't forget, we got Halloween coming up, and that will be on a Friday. That will be a regular Friday episode. It will be the night before Halloween, because everybody's going to be doing stuff on Halloween. So I'm going to be doing mine the night before Halloween. And we got a lot of stuff coming up. So just stay tuned. Be sure to listen. And good night.